All right. We've got them, and we've been working all year on these questions. They are Lulu's. Is this place dangerous, or is this time dangerous?
You're great. Only you could read that like that. That is terrific, isn't it? Well, I think both would be true. I still would say that this place, because of what it represents, is the target of the enemy. And therefore, regardless of age, era, time in which we live, this will always be true. Seems especially true in this time, however, doesn't it? Because of the stuff I was talking about there, just a few comments related to home and marriage. But each era has its own uniqueness, and I think that cannot be kept out of a place like this. So they're intertwined. The point I want to make is that it's a time to be alert, to be aware of the dangers, and especially in this place where you're forming those habits and determining your philosophy of ministry.
Delighted to have Cynthia with us as well. She'll be participating. Here's another question. Cultivating a devotional life with your spouse in the ministry. How? Have any creativity ideas?
You want to do that or do you want me to talk about
it?
Why don't we do it together?
Okay.
You sing alto.
We don't have a devotional life together.
Isn't that a great thought? This is going out over national television, folks. It's true, though.
I think we we've wrestled with that with all honesty, and our lives are so busy in going in different directions in some ways, but not philosophically, not emotionally, not spiritually, that for us to just set aside a time together would be very difficult. But we both really believe in it. We both have our own times together, times with the Lord. And then we are so one spiritually and emotionally that when we do have occasion to discuss anything where we're wrestling with an issue, we have choices to make, decisions to make relative to our respective ministries, then we will take those times to really search what is God telling us, what does God's word say about this particular thing, and how should we handle it. So in that sense, we do have on occasion time together.
We have a little deal we've been doing for years, and that is every morning, most every morning, we'll get together over a cup of coffee. We'll talk about the day. Sometime that time is spent in prayer. Sometime it's spent struggling with an issue together. We have a little radio ministry called Insight for Living, and Cynthia runs that. And so she will occasionally bring something up that relates to that, or I'll talk about something that has to do with a struggle I'm going through, and we'll get into those times together. We found that works best in light of our schedule, just like we've never found a quote, family altar, quote, that works for us. Our kids are spread out over 9 years, and so we've never been able to get a nine-year attention span put together so that when one who is in junior high school could have any interest at all in one that's five, you know, that kind of thing. So we'd turn the time of going to bed into the best time for that. Our devotional life is a part of our life. It isn't like one set aside 6:45 to 7:15 time. That never worked in seminary. It never worked before seminary, and it hasn't worked since then. But there are occasions when I'll pick up the phone, call her, and I'll say, I've got to have some time with you to go over something. Or she'll do that with me, and we'll make time for that. While students here, one comment I would make regarding a creative thought is that you do some reading together. Cynthia and I did this in some biographies. And we would compare the things we found. We wouldn't read it necessarily together, but we would, after reading it, talk about the dimensions of that and how it affected our lives. That was one, that's one great memory I have of something we tried here that really really was profitable.
Go easy on this one. Oh, this is a Lulu. You ready for this?
No.
You are a great preacher and author. It seems as though all you touch turns to gold.
Cynthia wrote this.
Have you ever really struggled? If so, in what way?
Is that unbelievable? You're dying to answer that, aren't you, honey?
I plan to talk about that a little bit on Thursday night.
Thanks a lot, honey.
It has always been amazing to me that anyone could get puffed up in ministry. That staggers my imagination, because it seems that in our lives it's been one crucible after another, and I could go on and on and on with the ways that God has tempered our spirits, kept us very, very relevant and living in the world of reality beyond what you could even imagine. And I don't know that I need to go into the details of some of that. I do want to share Thursday night with some of the things that we went through when we were in seminary, which means nothing to you guys that are here. But I think any way that will hurt you deeply so that God can use you very effectively, God knows how to do that, and He designs each test with that in mind.
Yeah, that's a great principle. I think it was Tozer who said, "It's doubtful God has used anyone greatly until he's hurt him deeply." We are hurt on a rather regular basis. I get a little discouraged about that on occasion. Then I come across a passage like Acts 14 where they're praising Paul and Barnabas in one section, and the very next verse they stone Paul. And I put a little note in the margin of my Bible, "Welcome to the ministry." You will be the object of praise, which you are careful not to believe, and then you will be the object of attack, which unfortunately you will tend to believe more than you should. We tend to overreact, Cynthia and I do, because we're caring people, because we are giving kind of people who really believe in what we're doing. When we get attacked, and if you haven't had that happen yet, you will. It's like the guy who says, if you think that's something, just wait a while. It'll be a lot more than you can imagine. It's coming for you. And that continually occurs in our lives. I get hate mail every week. And when it comes to the church, I personally answer it. When it comes to Insight, we have people there that answer it because of the volume of mail. But it is sufficient to keep us cut right down to size. I also have four children. And our children have never been known to, you know, fall at our feet and all that. So we are in regular communication with our children, with teenagers. Two of them are still in their teens. And because of the way we run our home and family life, we are vulnerable, and we open ourselves to them. They are as free to speak to us, hopefully in respect, critically and directly about something, as they are to speak to us about something that they love. And they have exercised that right on a rather regular basis. It would be easy to turn this into all the bad things that have happened to us. Let me just mention one thing. I don't see myself as a great preacher. I love to preach. And when I hear great preachers, I want to go back and, you know, do it better. So I am forever dissatisfied with the job I do, and I can probably name on one hand the number of messages I've delivered that I walked away from and said, "I wouldn't touch that. That's the best I can do." Now, people who appreciate your ministry and will happen in your life, they will think of you perhaps as great, but you will know the struggle in your own life. I've struggled with stuttering earlier in my life. I've struggled with weight all my life. Fat is a constant battle for me, and I have to address it regularly. I struggle with a self-image, being raised in a family of three children. I was the youngest, and the first two were more gifted, brighter, it seemed to me, more loved. I'm not sure they were more loved, but I suffered from that, and the result was a need to overachieve. And so I've struggled with overachieving through a lot of my life and a lot of my ministry, which makes criticism all the harder, because when you overachieve and you get shot at, you think, well, good night. You know, what's it going to take? It's going to take perfection. And then you struggle over that. So there are those struggles that are very real in the Swindoll family that are no less real in your lives. And the best thing you can do when you see us minister and are part of this is to realize these are people of like nature, just as we are.
Here's another. What's your philosophy regarding pastors counseling women on a one-to-one basis?
I have maintained a rather strict position on that for the sake of safety. I do some counseling in very difficult situations. I happen to be blessed with a staff of men and women who are better counselors than I am. I am not really a good counselor, but sometimes they think I am, and so they won't talk to anybody else but me, and so they want to come to me. I will not see a woman at night. I will not go and counsel with a woman in her home. I've never done that, as that I can recall. And when they are at my study and we are in counsel, my secretary is there, not in the study, but right outside the door, and knows of the appointment and understands a bit of the story. So we have little signals that she can buzz me in 45 minutes or 30 minutes or so, and that'll help me tell the woman we're about through. I also, now this is just a quirk with me, so it may not be necessary for you, but I stay behind the desk when I counsel with a woman. First of all, so I won't look at her up and down her body. And second, so I can deal directly with what the situation is and we can stay on the subject of why she's there rather than drifting and letting it turn into some kind of emotional encounter between the two of us. I guess I'm a little scared, folks. I've seen it backfire on friends of mine, and I've seen it turn when they even didn't plan it that way, of course, and it led to something that brought reproach to the cause of Christ.
Man, look at this one. Before I came to DTS, I had a church, a pastor, and elders and friends. I belonged to a local body. People cared about my growth in the Lord. Then I moved to Dallas. Now I have no church, no pastor, no elders, no friends. Oh, I go to church, but it's different now. I feel as though I'm about the Lord's work, but alone,
right,
not part of a church. P.S. Since moving to Dallas, my home church has never written or called. What should I do?
That is a very, very honest piece of paper. And I want you to know that I thank you for writing that. You are a lonely person, whoever you are that wrote that. My counsel to you is that you not remain in this aloneness, because it will become unhealthy for you. I'm big on accountability. I'm big on a few close friends. I maintain that, and I am pleased to announce that I do have three or four guys with whom I share just about everything. I find that's safe. I find that's healthy. I think that would be wise for you. Surely, in this student body of over 1,000, you can locate one or two or three people of like mind with whom you can feel close enough to open your life and to reach out to develop a friendship. I would admit this, if I were in your shoes, to those few people that I am attracted to and tell them my need, so they will know that their coming into your life will help meet a need They won't think of it as a just kind of a distant friendship, but that it really is a need there. You want to say something here?
I really do want to say something. This may come across pretty strong, but I just like to make some comments about, I don't know from reading this, how many times you've contacted the people in your church that you left to find out about their welfare. I think so often we can sit back and wait for things to happen rather than getting out there and causing things to happen. And I'd say if there's a feeling of aloneness, I think we can do something about it. We can become involved. There's plenty of people everywhere who have needs. And by really deciding within ourselves that we're going to serve their needs, we're going to seek them out rather than waiting for them to seek us out. Become involved in a church rather than waiting to be asked to be involved in a church. Saturday, you can help with the children, get to know some of the parents. I think there's many, many ways in which some of the loneliness can be addressed. And I know when we were in seminary, when we went to San Francisco, when he was in the Marine Corps, we had those feelings, and we set up just a little church in our home, in our little apartment, where we listened to tapes, because it was a big city, and we were very, very young, and began to know where to go. But we did that, and we had church there for anyone that wanted to come. So I think once you just step out of that lonely feeling that you have, you can address some of these needs, not only for yourself, but for others.
I like your conclusion, what should I do?
That's right.
Rather than who's going to help me, kind of a cry out of pity, this says, I want to do something. Mm-hmm. And I think taking charge is a very important part. My comment here is, welcome to the ministry. You'll really feel alone at times in ministry. You'll be in a busy city. You'll move there. You'll be called there. And when you arrive, boy, there are war stories you hear about all the time, but they may not even be there to greet you. When I served an internship, none of the pastoral staff was even in town when we arrived. And I thought, boy, we'd have a band out and streamers, and Chuck and Cynthia are coming, but I told him that when we evaluated our internship at the end, and great remark he made. He said, oh, we planned it that way. That's just part of life, Chuck.
That's right.
People don't welcome you with big streamers and banners, and don't expect it. One of the difficulties we have as ministers and mates is we expect little special favors. We kind of want special treatment because we've, quote, given up so much. We really have not given up that much more than a medical doctor will give up to get his training, or an attorney to get his training. Before you get to feeling too sorry for all of your sacrifices, check out their life for the first 8 or 10 or 12 years of postgraduate stuff. It is very grim. And the hours they work when it's over. Don't compare the pay, but compare the hours.
Great source of encouragement
yeah.
there. As a member of the Board of Incorporate Members, what changes would you propose to the seminary to enhance spiritual life and home life of students?
Well, as a matter of fact, we are right now on the board addressing that. We're kind of in the middle of the process, so you've caught me a little prematurely. I'm great at raising issues, but I'm not as great at answering them, and so we are in the process of answering it. A couple or three things come to my mind. One would have to do with some system of accountability so that a student cannot stay all alone. Just as you cannot miss class without it suffering, without it taking a toll on you, so I wish there could be a way that we could set up an accountability program where you, at least for a while, must meet with others. That has been a concern of mine for people in ministry, not just people in seminary. Another would be a way of sharing home life together. I would wish that there could be set up a plan where through some rotation method, students could be in homes with one another, singles with marrieds, marrieds with marrieds, faculty with marrieds and singles. I would like there to be at this school a greater wedding between faculty and student body. I'd like to know the people who teach me better. One of the reasons I am so close to Dr. Hendricks is because he was gracious enough to be in our home when we invited him and to invite us to be in their home on a number of occasions while we were students here. That kind of oneness, I think, will really enhance the hospitality part. I'm a little stumped on the spiritual life because I am so down on legalism, and I'm so against spiritual life by legislation that I don't want to require. I don't want to work up a system that will require prayer every day or so many verses a week or that kind of meeting type thing. But hopefully, if we get the right attitude going and the right oneness and togetherness, the spiritual life will flow out of that. I know it does in our church. There's a spiritual life that Cynthia and I have sensed in our church in Fullerton for these 15-plus years we've been there that has been exciting, and I've never legislated it. We happen to be in a program right now in the process of waiting on God, and we have an adventure in prayer program where from 6:45 to 7:30 every morning, all through the year, from the first annual meeting that we held last May to the next one next May, we're meeting in this adventure in prayer, and it's been really well supported, and you really feel a sense of oneness with the people. Maybe it's part of this prayer chain that you've got going. Maybe that's the beginning of that idea.
The balance of marriage and ministry. What are the signs that it's getting off toward the ministry end of the scale?
That's a good question.
When one of them screams and says it's gone too far. Oh, goodness.
When you talk as couples together, I think it's terribly important that you be just as committed to listening. By allowing your mate to say what is on his or her heart, you will go a long ways toward keeping a balance. It was our observation, and for a period of time, it was our experience, that the one in the school can easily intimidate the one who is not in the school. And I think, in all honesty, that we do that without knowing we're doing it. I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning before he gets up and says, let's see, how can I intimidate my mate today? You don't do it that way. But your schedule is very clearly marked out. You've got class, you've got work, you've got assignments, and you've got to get it done, you've got a deadline. That in itself is intimidating. So in order for there to be the maintenance of a home, you have to deliberately state your desire that will not be the part of your lives that is set in concrete. You are interruptible. You care. You are interested. You are willing to hear. You're willing to help.
I think in the ministry you have, and I mean this sincerely, I think you have more control over the time factors than you have in seminary. In seminary, it's much more difficult because many of you are having to work as well as go to school, as well as take care and manage a household. And that makes it a lot more difficult. When you're in ministry, you can say, I've done this much and I cannot do any more. Chuck is very, very rigid about the time set aside for study and preparation for Sunday sermons, and invariably there are people that have needs who would like to have him counsel them, but he has communicated to them and to his staff that his staff will do that. So there, the control factor is a little bit easier. As far as within the family is concerned, I think a wife or a husband can get off target in whatever they're doing. We have a difficult time in our own home of balancing all of this. I have said on many occasions that radio takes no holidays, it takes no vacation, and there is no way that I can get away from certain responsibilities that have to be done just so that that can continue. So we struggle with balance, but we have a very open communication where one or the other can say, I think you're going too far in that direction, or maybe not going too far, but I have some special needs right now. We had a situation recently where we were supposed to go to, we call it an international steak fry. It's an occasion where some of the members of our church, whoever wants to, can get together and we'll have charcoal broil steaks and meet some missionaries and just that we're supporting, and it's a real neat evening. Well, I had just that day had an encounter with a man on my staff, and it had taken us 5.5 hours to go through a lot of issues. Well, by the time I came home, I was thoroughly drained and really hurting from all that the issues that have been raised during that time. You know, what are we going to do about all of these things? And I just said to Chuck, I can't go out with this group. I need you. I need to talk to you. And so we took the evening, went out to dinner, and just really had a grand time together. And that's where I think the balance comes in. It's when you realize that true, we should have been there in many ways, but we had a higher need that evening, and he met that need by being with me, and I appreciated it. You can't orchestrate balance, but you know when it's present or when it isn't.
The question was, what are the signs that it's getting off? I think silence is one. Mm-hmm. A breakdown of communication. A lack of openness. I don't know. I'm sure not every home is as open as our home with one another. We have very open relationships with parent-child relationships, and she and I are very open and honest with each other. Haven't always been, but we've cultivated that. And so when I sense I'm not getting this openness, I'm not getting this free flow, I know there's trouble brewing. So I'll ask. And usually it's true.
I just have to add this. I know you wives will appreciate this. When we were in seminary our first 2 years, Chuck didn't work. He was working with the youth at our church, at Grace Bible Church, and I worked. I had a really good job at a bank. And on Fridays, I had to work late. So every Friday when I came home, he had thoroughly and totally cleaned the apartment. And then we always went out to just this tiny little place where you could get, you think we love charcoal broiled steaks, it sounds like it, doesn't it? But you could get one there with a little salad, didn't cost too much. But I appreciated the fact that he could have taken that time, a choice time when no one was around, to really study, but he balanced it out with some of the needs in our family.
Hmm. Oh, shucks.
I think it's very obvious to you that Chuck and Cynthia are really people who care and who are here to help. And we've devised these sessions so that you can ask any question you want. There are no holds barred. And what we would like you to do is to take a 3x5 small piece of paper, write down your questions. This will go on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So if you want to turn them in, you can either bring them here and there will be someone at the back who can collect them, or if you'd like to deposit them in the office, just here to the side. We would be glad, Karen Schoholm would be glad to pick them up. You are dismissed, and remember, classes start at 12:30.
Thank you.